a couple of episodes of X-1 that have some very interesting names. We're going to start the hour off with one named Star Bright. Starlight, Star Bright, the first star I see tonight. Although here in Vancouver, it's a little too late in the evening for the first star of the night. And then we're going to finish off an episode known as The Outer Limit. And yes, this is an X-1 episode called The Outer Limit. So I'm assuming that somewhere in the universe there exists an Outer Limits episode called X-1. If I ever find it, I'm totally playing it. But sit back, relax, and enjoy some spoken word entertainment here on CITR 101.9 FM.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah. Explosion! There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at CITR. So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
In just a moment, X-1. But first, some of the funniest situations you've ever witnessed occur every Wednesday night when the devilish imagination of MC Jack Bailey gets to work on NBC's Truth or Consequences. You won't believe it until you hear it, so listen in tomorrow. Then another laugh session is in store later on with the wise and witty Groucho Marx as he and contestants play You Bet Your Life, while the melodic note in your Wednesday evening schedule is music and fun on airtime with Giselle McKenzie.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2. X-1. Fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, the Mark Clifton story, Star Bright.
Well, it's finally happened. I've known it would for a long time now. That's why I'm writing this, in the hopes that you'll understand and not think me mad. Whatever the outcome, I hope you will not judge me too harshly for what I've done or failed to do.
Mr. Holmes... Mr. Holmes.
Come in. Oh, hello, Chief.
I just wanted to let you know, sir, that we're doing everything we can to find the children.
Yes, I'm sure you are.
We've got 300 men out combing the woods for them. The Army base has volunteered another 100 men, and we've sent an all-points bulletin to every police unit in the country.
Fine, fine.
I just wanted to check and make certain our description is accurate. Your little girl, Star, was wearing a blue dress and white sandals. Is that right?
That's right.
And she is how old?
Six years old.
And the little howl boy, how old was he?
Seven, I believe, yes. Seven.
Uh-huh, yeah. Thank you. Well, I'll be in touch with you.
Well, that's very good of you, Chief. Oh, by the way...
Yes?
Mr. and Mrs. Howell, how are they taking it?
Well, they're pretty upset, naturally. Mr. Howell, he's out with the men searching.
Yes, I know.
Mrs. Howell's in the car outside.
Ruth is outside? Why didn't she come in?
Well, she said she'd rather not.
Oh, I see.
Do you, Pete?
Well, Mrs. Howell, I thought...
I decided to come in. I'm not going to sit on my feelings any longer.
Now, Mrs. Howell...
No, I have to say this. Pete, Bill and I have been your neighbors for almost a year now. Our children have been almost inseparable.
I know that.
Then how can you just sit here writing letters when they may be lost somewhere or in trouble? Why aren't you out with Bill and the rest of them searching?
I can't. Ruth, I know how you feel. Please try to understand. I intend to help find Bobby and Star, but I must do this first.
Why? What's so important about
it? Ruth, I'm sorry.
Sorry? Then why don't you act like a man? You're inhuman.
Please.
I don't ever want to see you or speak to you again. Ever.
Perhaps you won't.
What was that, Mr. Holmes?
Nothing. Chief, if you don't mind, I'd like to be alone for a moment.
Okay, Mr. Holmes.
I'll keep in touch.
How can I tell them? How can I make them understand? I write this to you because they must be made to understand somehow, but I have to begin at the beginning. I think I first noticed it one evening when Star was 3 years old. I was in my reading chair going over some work. Star was sitting on the floor in the circle of light with her blunt-nosed scissors and scraps of paper. Her long silence made me glance down.
And then we glue this together, put a line here and there.
Star.
Like that.
Star.
Hmm? What is it, Daddy?
Can I see what you've made?
Uh-huh.
Well, well. It's quite a coincidence.
What?
You know what they call a piece of paper joined together with a half twist like this?
Nope.
It's called a Mobius strip.
You mean somebody already made one?
A man named Mobius, mathematician, long time ago.
Did he know you can put a line on it like that so it has one side all joined?
Yes, yes, he did. Someday I'll tell you what it means.
Now do it.
What?
Tell me about a Mobius strip.
Very complicated.
Then read me about it.
Oh, you wouldn't understand, honey.
Read me anyway.
Okay, young lady. But I warn you, it'll be like one of those nonsense rhymes. At least, I hope it will. At 3 years, a child shouldn't have enough functioning intelligence to put together a Mobius strip. I had known for some time now that Star was an exceptionally bright child. Just how bright, I had no idea. Not until I began to read to her from an advanced physics book, The Theory of the Mobius Strip. To the power of infinity. Now then, are you sufficiently mixed up, young lady?
Daddy, you know what?
What?
You read too slow. You say a word, then I think a long time, then you say another word.
Oh, I see. Just what would you have me do about it?
Well, teach me to read. Then I can think as quick as I want.
The word is quickly. It's an adverb.
Oh, Daddy, really? You pick on such unimportant things. I want to learn to read.
Okay. When would you like to begin?
Right now. Tonight.
Before she went to bed that evening, my daughter was able to read. In the months that followed, a great deal happened. Some of our friends, like Jim Petrie, have dropped in and been amused to see her on the floor, rapidly turning the pages of an encyclopedia as big as she is. Sit down, Jim.
Oh, thanks.
Star, aren't you going to say hello to Uncle Jim?
Hello. Huh?
I see she's taken to looking at the pictures in the encyclopedia, huh? Mm.
Oh, yeah, yes. Come on in the library, Jim. I'd like to talk to you privately.
Yeah, sure thing.
Bring your drink, huh?
Okay.
I'll shut the door here.
Why all the secrecy?
Sit down.
Hmm?
Now, Jim, we've been friends, you and I, ever since engineering school.
So?
Neither of us have ever mentioned it, but one of the reasons we were drawn together is because both of us have IQ somewhere up in the genius ratings.
Oh, I think it was more than that.
Well, that played a part. It isn't easy to be exceptional in a world which regards mediocrity as the only behavior above suspicion.
Well, we all have to live with our afflictions. Yours and mine is a quick mind in a dull environment.
What would you do, Jim, If you were a parent, as I am, whose wife had died, as Eleanor did, and you discovered that your only child was, well, afflicted with a fantastically brilliant mind.
Star? Oh, come on, Pete. Any little girl who's content just to look at the pictures in the encyclopedia.
Jim.
I mean, after
Jim,
all. What?
She wasn't looking at the pictures.
Huh?
She was reading the pages.
What? But she was turning them as fast as humanly possible.
She was reading them.
What?
I know. I've tested her. She not only remembers everything, she understands the concepts. She even gets impatient with
them. Well, have you measured her?
Well, I've given her IQ tests, aptitude tests, reaction tables, all the paraphernalia for measuring something we know nothing about.
And?
Tests don't work.
How do you mean?
Well, either the tables are screwy or stars beyond all measurement.
Pete, are you sure you're not projecting this? I mean, isn't it possible that a few accidental...
Daddy!
Yes, honey.
I got lonely.
Okay, come on in.
Uncle Jim, would you read me a story?
Why don't you read your own story?
Because I'm only three, and three-year-olds can't read.
And so she had found the answer to her affliction by herself, conformity. She had already learned to conceal her intelligence. So many of us break our hearts before we learn that. When Star was 4 years old, according to state law, her mind had developed enough so she could attend nursery school.
Hi, Daddy.
Hi, honey. Did you like nursery school?
Oh, yes, it was fun.
What'd you learn today?
Not much. I tried to cut out paper dolls, but the scissors kept slipping.
Now look, Star, don't overdo it. That's as bad as being too quick. The idea is that everybody has to be just about standard average. That's the only thing people will tolerate. It's expected that a little girl of four should know how to cut out paper dolls properly.
Oh, I guess that's the hard part, isn't it, Daddy? To know how much you ought to know.
Yeah. That's the part I always found hard when I was young.
It's really all right. I let one little girl show me how to cut them out, so now she likes me. She just took charge of me and told the other kids they should like me, too. So they did, because she's the leader, even if she is one of the stupids.
What?
The stupids. That's the trouble with you, Daddy. You don't grasp things right away. That's because you're only a tween.
A tween? I assume that means an in-between?
That's right. Mm-hmm. You're in between a stupid and a bright.
And you're a bright?
Yes. I made those names up when I was very little.
How little?
Oh, about 6 months old.
The thoughts began to whirl around in my head after that one. A small fear kept growing inside me. How profound was this little imp that was staring up at me? How much did she understand already? Even as the thought formed, I learned the final horrifying fact about my little girl.
It's all right, Daddy. Don't be afraid of me.
Well, how did you know that I was thinking anything like that?
Well, I just figured it out.
Star.
Yes, Daddy?
Now, I want you to answer me honestly when I ask you this next question, will you?
Yes.
Star. Can you read people's minds? Are you a telepath? Well?
Yes, Daddy.
I thought so. You read my mind just now, didn't you?
Yes.
Now, I'd like to know something else.
All right.
Can you teach me to do it?
You're already learning it, Daddy. The trouble is you're so slow you didn't even know you were learning.
Oh, I see.
Daddy?
Yeah?
You know what I wish?
What do you wish?
Well, nothing.
All the same, I knew exactly what she was wishing. She was wishing for a companion whose mind would match her own. You see, I was becoming telepathic. Just a minute. Well, hello.
Is your little girl home?
Yeah, she's upstairs. Who are you?
I'm Robert.
Robert who?
Robert Howell.
My mother and father moved next door yesterday.
Oh, well, come in, Robert.
I'd like to play with your little girl.
How'd you know I had a little girl?
Oh, I just know.
I see. And how old are you?
I'm 6.
Well, I'll ask Star to come downstairs. I'm sure she'll be glad to see you.
Yes, she will.
Tell me, Robert, are you a tween or a bride?
Oh, I'm a... What did you say, Mr. Holmes?
Nothing. I didn't have to say it. I could read his thought. He was a bride, and it was no accident that he and his parents had moved next door. Somehow, Star had managed to make contact with him, and they had arranged the whole thing. A father is prepared to lose his daughter eventually, but not so soon, not so terribly soon. They're coming. Oh, hello, Ruth. Something wrong?
I was just looking for Bobby. I thought he was over here playing with Star.
Well, I thought they were over at your place.
I don't understand it.
I've noticed that they've been disappearing for a couple of hours almost every afternoon.
Well, I suppose they'll turn up again. They know better than to cross the street by themselves. They're too little for that. If they come here first, tell them to come over and have some milk and cookies.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Oh, by the way, this must belong to your Star.
Oh, what's that?
Oh, some sort of coin or metal or something. I found it out in the backyard after Star and Bobby were playing. It looks brand new.
Let's have a look.
Oh, is something wrong?
Did you say you found this in your backyard?
Yes. What is it?
I don't know.
Well, I've got to get back. Bill will be getting home for dinner soon, so see you later.
Yes.
Hello?
Jim?
Yes.
Do you have a portable spectrophotometer?
Well, sure. We've got a dozen here at the lab.
Pack one up and get over here right away, will you?
Well, Pete, I don't quit till 5.
Look, do as I say, huh? It's important.
Well, okay.
Huh?
Well?
Let me check the amount of radioactivity again.
You've checked it 4 times.
That's about it.
Okay. What's your opinion of this coin?
Well, first of all, let me say this. It's the real McCoy.
And?
Also, it doesn't exist.
Makes sense.
Look, Pete, that coin is pre-Egyptian. It's hand-cast. It's made out of one of the oldest bronze alloys, one that was lost 4,000 years ago.
So it's 4,000 years old.
It is, and it isn't.
What do you mean?
Listen, Pete, old coins show wear. The edges get rounded with handling. The surface oxidizes. The molecular structure changes, crystallizes. Pete, this coin is authentic, and yet it's brand new. It might have been struck off yesterday.
You realize, of course, that that's impossible.
Where'd you get it, Pete?
I don't know. I think the kid's got it.
Star?
Yes.
How?
I don't know. I'm almost afraid to think.
Well, why not ask her?
She isn't around. She and Robert are off playing somewhere.
Well, do you know where?
No, I... Oh, Jim, it's just too fantastic. It isn't possible.
I haven't said a word.
I know what you're thinking.
As a matter of fact, I was thinking something fantastic. How did you guess?
I just guessed. Jim, let's find those kids right now.
Okay.
Star! Robert! Let's try the playroom. Star? Robert? Not in here. Let's try back here.
I hear something. What? Pete, it's coming from the room we were just in.
That's impossible. There's no place they could have hidden.
I'm going to open that door.
Peek-a-boo, Uncle Jim!
There they were, in the middle of the playroom, holding hands, a little shamefaced, a little defiant. Star, Robert, where have you been? Now, I know you weren't in this room a few seconds ago, and there are no windows you could get through. Well?
It's nothing, Daddy. We just went a little ways.
That is not answering me. Where did you go?
You see, Star, we've found this coin.
Come on.
I shouldn't have to tell. You're both just tweens.
Star, I'm still your daddy. Even brides have feelings about their parents. Now.
I tried to ESP you, Daddy.
Does she mean extrasensory perception?
Yes.
You just don't ESP good, Daddy. Robert does it very nicely. He can always find me when I hide.
That's because you don't have much imagination.
I do, too.
Yeah, but you always have to look at a book to ESP what's in it so you leave an ESP smudge. I just look at where you left the smudge, and I go to that place, and that time, and there you are.
Oh, but that's cheating.
It isn't. You just haven't got imagination. You can't teleport yourself to a place that hasn't been.
I can, too. What about the moon people? They haven't been yet.
Oh, Star, they have, too. Not for your daddy, they haven't, but for the things from Arcturus. The moon people were about 10 million light years ago.
Now, wait a minute, kids. Hold on. Jim, have you been listening to this?
I think I heard it.
Now, look, kids. You're either playing a big joke on us older folks, or you've actually figured out a way to travel to places in the past. Right?
And in the future, too, Daddy.
Star, could you tell us how you do it?
It would be easier if I could ESP it to you.
Well, just pretend we're stupids and tell us in words.
Well, you remember the Mobius strip?
I remember. She made it about a year ago, Jim.
Well, you join the ends of a strip of paper with a half twist to make one surface. Then you take a sheet and give it a half twist so you can join the edges together all over.
That's Klein's bottle.
Oh, you know about that.
Yes, we know that. Go on.
Well, then you take a cube. You imagine a cube, and you twist it.
Tesseract?
Shh, go on, Star.
And you ESP the twisted cube all together the same way you did Klein's bottle. Now, if you do that big enough, all around you, so you're sort of folded into it, you can teleport yourself any place you want to go. And that's all there is to it.
Jim, what do you think?
I need another drink, Pete. A big one.
That's all there was to it. The line, the plane, the cube, those were Euclidean physics. The Mobius strip, the Klein bottle, the twisted cube, those were Einsteinian physics. Well, I was pretty advanced in both, but I'd have to do some heavy thinking to really grasp it. Meanwhile, the two little kids stood there staring at us.
Star, Robert, can you tell us some of the places you've been?
All over, Uncle Jim. The Romans and the Egyptians and places like that.
Is that how you got the coin?
I found it. It wasn't stealing, was it, Daddy? I just found it in the dirt.
We'll skip that for a minute. What about going to the future?
There isn't any future, Mr. Holmes.
What's that?
It's kind of hard to explain. Even Star doesn't get it.
Oh.
Well, when she gets to be 6, like I am, she'll probably understand.
Well, try to explain it to me.
Well, it's all connected, just like the Mobius strip. If you go far enough, you'll get back to where it starts again. You start with the cavemen, then us men, then atomic men, the moon men, planet men, star men, and brights. Only somehow...
What?
The brights got off the strip. We haven't been able to find them any place in time.
I'd sure like to know how they got off and where they are.
Now, look, kids, this kind of thing can be dangerous. You might be eaten by a dinosaur or something.
Well, we'd just ESP ourselves right out of there.
Well, anyway, I don't want you leaving this part of the time strip. Not again.
Daddy.
Now, I may be just a tween, but I'm your father.
I always mind you, Daddy.
Yeah? What about going off the block?
But, Daddy, we didn't cross a single street.
Nevertheless...
Pete, think of what you're doing. Pictures, specimens, recordings. Not only from the past, but from the future. Pete, I beg you.
Jim, this is my daughter.
But what a contribution. We could be ages ahead of ourselves.
No. Star. Robert, I'd like your promise you won't leave present time again. Well?
Okay.
All right. Now run along. Robert's mother has some cookies and milk for you.
Okay. See you later, Daddy. Meet you there.
That was a moon man.
Jim, I'm sorry.
Well, I suppose if I had a daughter...
Are you going to report this?
And have everybody give me the horse laugh? I may be just a tween, Pete, but I'm not an utter fool.
It took me almost 6 months to do it. I don't know how many times I visualized a cube and ESP'd it a half twist and tried to seal the edges around me. And then once, there was a flash, just for an instant. I was concentrating on Caesar's triumphant march into Rome. And for the briefest instant, there it was. I was standing on a roadway watching, and then it vanished.
Hey.
Hi, Daddy.
What are you two characters plotting?
Nothing, Daddy.
Well, I'm going to my study for a while. Star?
Yes, Daddy?
You remember your promise about not leaving present time, don't you?
Yes, Daddy.
You going to keep it?
Yes, Daddy.
Okay. I'm holding you to it. Hello?
Hello, Pete, this is Ruth Hall.
Yeah?
Are the kids there?
No.
When did you see them last?
What time is it? Oh, about 10 this morning, 6 or 7 hours ago. Why?
Oh, Pete, I'm worried.
What's up?
Well, they were upstairs in Bobby's room. I was in the living room. Now, I could swear they didn't come downstairs, and yet, when I went up there, they were gone. That was over 5 hours ago.
Ruth, are you sure they didn't come down?
In that living room every moment. Pete, I'm afraid.
Now, Ruth, don't get panicky. I'm coming right over. Just don't get panicky. There wasn't a trace of them. Well, that isn't exactly true. Remember what Robert had said about Star leaving an ESP smudge? Well, I was able to catch it in Robert's room. It had something to do with where the Brights went when they got off the time strip. That's it, of course. They wouldn't disobey by leaving present time. But isn't it possible that there is more than one present time? Isn't it possible that another now coexists with ours? That's the clue, of course.
I'm going to call the police, Pete.
I don't think it'll do any good.
But we've got to find them. They'd have come back by now.
Yes, if they could.
What do you mean?
Nothing.
Well, what are you going to do?
I'm going back to my study to think.
To think? Aren't you going to look for them?
I have to figure out where to look.
Well, I'm not going to sit around doing nothing. I'm calling the police.
That was this morning. I've been doing some desperate concentrating since then, Jim. I'm writing this down so you'll know. I've already managed to go back to the time of Cheops and ahead to the time when men were navigating to distant planets in a matter of days. But the big job remains. How to get into a dimension parallel with our own at the same time. I figured out that to get the equivalent of a Mobius strip with depth, you must use the supercube, the tesseract. That's what I'm working on at the moment. If I succeed, there is a possibility. I may not be able to get back. I hope you will be able to make Bill and Ruth Howell understand. Okay, now if I take 6 cubes and fold them in one another so that every angle is a right angle... Yes. All right, I've got that. And now, if in folding, I ESP the tesseract, a half twist around myself.
Mr. Holmes. Mr. Holmes, are you in there? Mr. Holmes. We'll have to break in. It's locked from the inside. Mr. Holmes.
Pete, where are you? Pete?
That's funny. The door was locked from the inside, but here's his fountain pen with the ink still wet. But he's gone.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the final installment of Frederick Pohl's novel, Slave Ship. Story of a world engaged in the wildest of all possible non-wars, where the order of the day was even wilder still. Spare every animal and throw the men to the wolves. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Star Bright, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Mark Clifton and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Sarah Fussell, Lawson Zerbe, Bill Quinn, Billy Harris, Ralph Bell, and Kate Wilkinson. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Do you want to go to a party with me?
No, the game's on.
Oh, I almost forgot. I'll be right there.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl.
Do you like sports and don't care who knows? Then CITR Sports needs you. If you like sports, are into radio, or generally just want to have a great time, then come join us. Email our sports coordinator at sports101@citr.ca to find out more, or come by the station in the new sub. See you soon.
Watch, cause I'm the man.
UBC Africa Awareness Initiative is a student-run organization that advocates for a greater inclusion of Africa and African-related issues in UBC academia and social life. Some of our major events include Dioko, UBC's largest African dance party, Culture Night, a celebration of African culture and diversity, and Conference Week, where our goal is to foster more intelligent and intellectual dialogue about Africa on the UBC campus. With this in mind, we hope to contribute towards creating global citizens with a more informed perspective of the continent.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, presents
X minus one.
Tonight's story, The Outer Limit, by Graham Doerr. We go ahead now in time to 1965. We're on a vast concrete runway set in the desert of the Southwest. A giant metal ship stands before us, prow pointed for the stars. And in 5 minutes, the signal will flash and it will tear up through the atmosphere to the outer limit.
Attention! Attention! Clear field for takeoff! Clear field!
5 minutes, Steve.
Right. Warm her up, Charlie.
Turn her over.
I want to go over procedure again, Steve.
Don't worry, I got it straight.
We'll just make sure.
Okay, I take her up on jets to 50,000, then I cut in the rockets.
No lower, or your tail blast will burn out 3 counties.
I climb 4 minutes on rockets, then start maneuver tests.
Remember that, no more than 4 minutes. The ship isn't like those strato rockets that you've been testing. She's the first one built for outer space. If she works, you can go clear to the moon.
If I'd have known, I'd have brought my toothbrush.
Not this trip. Now get this, Steve. You've got power there to clear the Earth's gravitational field, but remember, after you cut in the rockets, you've only got 10 minutes fuel. If you go beyond the outer limit and don't save fuel for the return, you won't get down again, ever. You'll drift out into space. Get that now. 10 minutes fuel.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, this project is a lot more important than that cosmic ray bomb that they're testing out in the Pacific tonight.
Well, the Security Commission brass doesn't think so. I don't see any undersecretaries under anything.
Don't you worry, Steve. In the long run, our ship will make the CR bomb back-page stuff. But in the meantime, it's just as dangerous. Now, remember, half the principles in this ship are pure theory, slide rule stuff. If anything goes wrong, we may have to scrape you off the landscape with a soup spoon.
You have a charming sense of humor.
Here's what I'm getting at, Steve. We're risking your neck in this test. Anything blows, we don't want to have the next man pull the same boner. So keep your mic open. Keep talking. If anything goes wrong, we want to know exactly why. And we won't be able to ask you. Let us know before you pull every switch, before you do anything. Got that? Even if you only have to blow your nose.
All right, get those fuel lines away.
Well, I guess that's about all, Steve.
Hey, that reminds me. If Mary calls, I'm just up on a milk run. I didn't tell her today was it.
How is Mary?
She's okay, but she's due about now, and I don't want her to get nervous.
Hey, I didn't know the baby was that close. Steve, you know, I really ought to be sending a single man on this job.
What, and cut me out of a soft paycheck? Forget it, Hank. You know you can't get anybody else who can take 15 G's acceleration when those rockets cut in.
Yeah, I know. It's time, Steve.
Yeah. I'll see you later. Don't worry, Hank. I'll sweat for both of us.
Right.
Button her up, Charlie. So long, Hank.
So long. We'll give you the light from control.
X2JTR to control. Are you there yet, Hank?
Okay, Steve. I'm ready to go.
Mr. Hanson.
Ready on radar, Sergeant?
Check.
Mr. Hanson, you better see this.
What is it, Elsie?
Message sent up for Steve. Mrs. Weston just left for the hospital.
What? Hello, Steve.
Yeah.
Stand by a minute.
Shall I hold it up, Mr. Hanson?
Yes. No, wait just a minute. It's too late now.
You going to tell him?
Well, maybe he's got enough to worry about.
Hey, what's holding us up, Hank? Something on your mind?
No, there's nothing, Steve. I just wanted to say good luck. All right, Charlie. Give him the light. All right, Steve, I'm reading you clear.
I'm at 20,000. Airspeed 600. It's running fine. Soundproofing works. There's a 3-degree waver in the AGY pressure.
Got that, Charlie?
Check. Dead center on radar, Mr. Hanson.
50,000 now. I'm cutting loose the port jet. Now the starboard. Now I'm off jets. Airspeed dropping. Now I'm opening the rocket ports. The switch sticks a little, Charlie. Oxy-alcohol pressure, 350. All right, now I'm advancing the ignition key. Here goes rocket one.
Steve, you all right?
Yeah. Feels like somebody slugged me with a sledgehammer. Airspeed now 1,200. Here goes number two. She's okay, Hank. Running like a Swiss watch. She's okay.
Hello, Steve. Elapsed rocket's time is now 4 minutes. What's your altitude? Over to you.
Speed 4,400, still climbing. Altitude 297 miles.
All right, you're at the outer limit. Level off for maneuver tests. You've got exactly 6 minutes fuel left.
I'm starting a 3-degree left bank. She's a little sluggish. There, it's all right. There's a low vibration somewhere. Maybe the cockpit cover. My view screen's a little fogged. Now I'm straightening out.
5 minutes fuel left.
Now I'm starting a 3-degree right. Hey, of all the...
What's the matter? What's wrong?
There's something up here. Something shining.
What are you talking about?
There's something above me, Hank. I'm going to chase it.
Steve, you're at the outer limit now.
I can see it plain now.
Now, Steve, don't go any higher. You've only got 4 minutes left. You've only got...
I'm getting static. I can't hear you, Hank. Dead ahead now. I'm going to make a pass at it and get a good look. Here goes. Hey, it's swerving to meet me. It's dead ahead now. Look out, it's dead ahead.
Hello, Steve. Steve, come in.
9 minutes fuel gone.
There's still no sign.
Hello. Hello, Steve, what happened? Try to get the crash squad out. Tell the Army squadron to alert their search plane.
Right.
9.5 minutes gone.
Hello, Steve. Steve, listen to me. What's happened?
Hello?
Where the devil is he?
Charlie Brooks.
Hello. Come in, Steve. Steve,
no,
come in.
I don't know. You'll have to call Elsie for the...
Hello. Hello, Steve. Hello, Steve.
10 minutes.
Steve.
That's the end of the fuel.
How long has it been now?
10 hours, Mr. Hanson.
Nothing more on radar, Sergeant?
The screen's blank.
Colonel Carulli called in. The search planes are back. Couldn't find anything.
Should be some trace.
He couldn't have bailed out, could he?
You don't hit the silk at 4,400 miles an hour. We either went past the outer limit and ran out of fuel, or something blew and we'll find the pieces scattered from here to the coast. Why does it have to be the best man? Always the best man. Charlie, we got to figure out what was wrong.
Right.
Something must have blown.
All right, I'll call him. Goodbye. Mr. Hanson, there's a message from Northside Hospital for Steve.
Well, what is it?
Mrs. Weston is fine. It's a boy.
Well, thank you, Elsie. It's a boy, Charlie.
Yeah.
Fine, fine. It's a boy. He didn't even know that she went to the hospital. How am I going to tell Mary that?
No, it wasn't your fault, Mr. Hanson. The ship was tested.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll build another, and some other flying fool will shoot past the outer limit into space. Well, I'm getting old, Charlie. You can remember when I used to take him up myself. Now I've got to send other men.
Look, it's a job, Mr. Hanson.
Now I'm afraid. Every time I hear a jet go off, I jump. Every time I have to send somebody up in a new model, I start to sweat.
Mr. Hanson.
Yeah?
I think I've got something on the radar.
No flights scheduled in, are there, Elsie?
No, the whole day's cleared.
He's coming in behind us. Here he comes over the building.
Yeah. What crazy jockey is buzzing the field like that? Is that an army plane, Charlie?
No, I can't see. Here he comes back again. I know that engine. Yes, it's Steve.
That's impossible.
Look, that's his ship.
It can't be.
It's circling back for landing.
Charlie, clear the field.
He's coming back in. Mr. Hanson, there's not another ship in the world that looks like that. I tell you, it's got to be Steve.
Thank God. All right, sit down over there, Steve. Quicker we get this done, the quicker you get over to see Mary and the baby. Elsie, give the order to check and refuel the rockets. I don't want anybody in here till I get Steve's reports. Barry Nichols. All right, Steve, what's happened? What the devil happened to you?
Hank, that cosmic ray bomb. Does it still go off tonight?
What are you talking about? Straighten out, Steve. Where have you been for the last 10 hours?
Listen, Hank, there's something more important.
Now, come on. I've got to get a report on the screen to Washington. So let's have it, will you? I've got to know how you stretched 10 minutes fuel to keep you in the air for 10 hours.
One thing before
now,
I talk.
Now, look, Steve.
Will you have the Geiger men run over the ship before they refuel?
What did you run into?
So help me, Hank, I don't know. We better check and make sure it isn't radioactive.
Elsie, add a Geiger report on the standard check. Steve, maybe we better have the medics look you over, too.
No, I'm all right. They said I'd be all right.
They? Look, son, I know you've had a tough time, but we've had this field on the alert for 10 hours, boy. One of the army boys cracked up looking for you, and he's hurt bad. So let's have the story. Let's have it straight.
I don't know how to tell you, Hank. Hank, I saw something up there.
At 300 miles?
I chased something up there, Hank, and I caught it.
Now, don't hand me that,
listen,
Steve.
Listen! I was cruising along. Just starting the right bank when I spotted something. It must have been going about half my speed. It was egg-shaped and smooth. I made a pass at it, and I came back for another, and then there was a humming sound.
Humming?
Sort of a vibration. And then I blacked out. I was headed straight for it at 4,400 miles an hour. I thought it was going to be the biggest smash since Hiroshima, and... Listen, Hank, is there a drink in that bottle?
Yeah, sure. Well... What happened?
Hank, I came to inside their ship.
Steve, this whole thing has been a devil of a strain on you. I'm going to call Major Donaldson from the Army base. Ask him to sit in.
The psychiatrist? Yeah, that's a good idea. Let him run his tests. He'll tell you I'm not kidding. Because, Hank, unless I miss my guess... I've just been tipped off to the way the world ends.
You should be getting drowsy now. Count backwards from 10.
10, 9, 8, 7.
He's under. Now we attach the head plate electrodes and the cortical pickup. We'll look out for that wire, Mr. Hanson. 3-0 setting and 31.3. Now, throw that switch, Mr. Hanson. I have to start him off by suggestion. All right, Steve. You're in your ship now. You're in the rocket.
Rocket?
You're in the rocket. You're in the rocket, and you've just sighted something strange.
Now I'm starting at 3 degree right.
What's that?
Hey, there's something up there. Something shining.
His memory pattern. We're picking it up electronically.
Something above me, Hank. I'm going to chase it.
It's piped through the audio circuits.
Getting static. I can't hear you, Hank.
This is where we lost contact with it.
I'm going to make a pass at it. Hey, it's swerving to meet me. It's dead ahead now. Look out. It's dead ahead.
Now what?
This is where he blacked out. Not telling how long, minutes or hours.
What's that noise?
I don't know. Shh.
Where? How did I get here? What? Who are you?
Is he seeing things?
Galactic Patrol. What's that?
Well, what are they saying, Steve? What are they saying?
It's about nuclear fission. They know about it. They know the danger of it. Long ago, they had wars that almost destroyed them. But finally, they learned. Now they've outlawed war.
Go on, Steve.
They patrol space. When their detector picks up an atomic explosion, they send a patrol. They've been observing Earth, and they found wars and rumors of wars.
What are they going to do?
They've quarantined us.
Quarantined?
They've isolated all Earth because we're infected with a communicable disease. Because we don't know how to control ourselves yet. Until we learn, we'll be a menace to the whole universe.
What is this nonsense?
Quiet. How are they going to do it, Steve?
Well, they've spread out a layer here of a, I don't know what to call it. It's all around the Earth. It's miles deep. And when there's an atomic explosion on Earth, the radioactive particles will drift up to this layer and set off a chain reaction. It'll go around the world in microseconds, and that's the end. Yes? Yes, I understand. I've got to bring back the warning. You're going to put me back in my ship to bring the warning.
Now what?
Blacked out again. I guess that's all.
What does all that mean?
It's what he remembers.
You don't think that that really happened?
No, no. Narco psychometry circuits produce what he remembers. It just means that Steve believes this happened.
No, I don't like to see this. I've seen too many top pilots snap. Steve is the best I've known. How bad do you think he is?
Well, frankly, outside of the presence of this well-organized hallucination, there are no signs of unbalance. May not be too serious. If he had a more plausible story, I'd be inclined to believe it.
Warning. Warning. Hank.
It's all right, boy.
Did you hear it, Hank? Do you understand?
Yeah, sure, sure. We've been quarantined.
No. Let me give you something to make you sleep, Steve.
But don't you understand? They fixed it so that if we set off one more nuclear explosion, we will have had it.
Of course, of course. Now, don't roll your sleeve down.
You don't believe me?
Now, take it easy, Steve.
But the test, they're setting off the cosmic ray bomb, Hank, tonight. What time is it?
11:20.
It's scheduled for midnight. Hank, we've got to stop that bomb.
Let Donaldson give you the hypos.
You got to believe me. I saw them. I got the warning. We touch off the Q-bomb tonight. We'll be the biggest galactic 4th of July of all time. The whole Earth will go up like a Roman candle. April 10th, 1965, the end.
Look, Steve, you better calm down now. Don't you want to see Mary and the baby? You've got a new son, remember?
That's just it. I want to see my son. I want him to live. If the bomb goes off, Hank, we got to stop it.
Mr. Hanson, I think we'd better get over to the base hospital.
Hank, you got to believe me.
Sure, sure, Steve. Maybe there's something to it. Look, it's out of our hands now, Steve. I'll put it in a report, shove it into Washington in the morning.
In the morning? There won't be any morning, Hank. You've got to call Washington now. Get the head of the Security Commission and postpone the test.
Now, you know I can't do that. My neck would be out a mile. Besides, this is 1965, not 45. 20 countries have the atomic bomb now. What's the use of stopping just this one? The rest will keep right on popping them off.
Well, then we'll have to call an international conference. Can't you understand, Hank? The first one that goes off finishes this. It's the end. They've given us the quarantine warning.
Steve, I think you'd better go with us to the base hospital.
Look, Steve, we can call up for a detail if we have to.
All right. All right, I'll go with you. You don't need a straitjacket.
That's the way, Steve. You'll probably feel better by morning. Let's go.
Tomorrow, I'll drive you over to the hospital to see Mary and the kid.
Sure.
Yeah, look at the ship under the floodlights. Pretty, huh? You'll be flying her again soon, Steve. Don't worry.
Yeah, I guess so. What's she doing out on the line? They refuel her?
Yeah, we got Clausewitz coming in tomorrow from Denver for another test. Figure we'd give you a day off.
Yeah, that's good. That's fine.
Steve!
Hey, go!
Come on, Donaldson! Hey. Steve! Steve, come back here!
He's heading for the rocket!
That crazy! Come. Steve! Get down off of there, Steve! We can't get at him now. That hood is armor glass.
Hey, he's waving.
To its control, the radio. Come on!
I should have gotten help!
Come on, Donaldson. The radio is still hooked up. Hello. Hello, Steve.
Listen to me, Hank. You got to call Washington now.
Look, Steve, come out of the rocket.
I'll call my men, Hanson.
Don't try anything, Hank. They refueled the rocket for tomorrow.
Take it easy, Steve.
Listen, you know what'll happen if I fire the rocket tubes down here?
Steve, don't, please.
It'll burn out every building for 5 miles. All of us in one big blast.
What do you want, Steve?
You got to stop that bomb. You got to call Washington now.
They won't believe me.
You make that call or I cut in the rocket. I mean it, Hank. You hook my screen to yours in parallel. I want to see exactly what you're doing.
All right. Just don't fire those rockets.
Get going, Hank. You got 12 minutes to make that call and stop the bomb.
All right. I'm making the parallel hookup now. Donaldson, you think he'll really blast?
I don't know. Up to now, I'd almost say it was normal, but this, Hanson, he's liable to do anything.
Steve, there. You're getting it on your screen?
Yeah. Now put that call through.
All right.
Operator.
Visit screen to Washington.
Visit screen circuits are busy, sir. If you'll try again in half an hour.
This is a Security Commission priority. Break in. Get me a line.
Just a moment, please.
10 minutes, Hank.
Listen, Steve, I'm trying.
Ready to take your call, sir.
Washington Security Commission 3. Urgent. I want Undersecretary Herbert Ames.
Washington 3. One moment, please.
Hurry, will you, please?
One moment, please.
Chicago.
San Marco calling Washington visit screen 3. Urgent.
Washington 3. One moment, please.
What time is it, Donaldson?
11:51.
Do you think he'll fire those rockets?
He might.
Washington.
Go ahead, San Marco.
Visit screen 3, Mr. Herbert Ames.
That is a coded exchange. I cannot accept your call without clearance.
Listen, Washington, put this through. This is Mr. Hanson of Hanson Rockets Incorporated at San Marco Air Base. This is a priority call. I'm coded.
One moment, please. I will check your code number.
Get it through, Hank. That bomb goes off at 12.
Will you be reasonable, Steve?
Your call has cleared San Marco. Washington visit screen 3, Herbert Ames.
This is your call, sir.
Security Commission, Ames. Oh, hello, Hanson.
Listen, Ames. You've got to get me the chief.
You kidding? He's at the test control room.
Yes, I know, but get him for me.
Hey, what's up? You look lousy. Or is it a bad circuit?
There's no time, Ames. I've got to get him before the test. It's about the ray bomb.
I can't take the responsibility.
Get it through, Hank, or I blast.
Hey, what's going on there?
Ames, my project has a high enough rating. This is a priority A call.
What? Well, it's your neck. Okay, I'll try to get him for you. He's in the control room, though. You'll have to switch off your screen and speaker and go on earphones. Too much going on in there. Security, you know.
You hear that, Steve? I've got to cut the screen.
All right. 8 minutes, Hank.
Hello? Hello? Yes, sir. This is Hanson at San Marco. No, sir. Priority A request to cancel the bomb test. No, look, I'm serious. I'm deadly serious. We sent the X-2JTR up today to the outer limit, and we uncovered evidence. Yes, on the automatic instruments. What's that? No, this is a possible chain reaction. No, I can't tell you the whole story. There isn't time. Yes, I'll bring the readings into Washington in the morning. You've got to postpone the test till you see them. Yes, I understand that. I understand about the press. I'll take complete responsibility for this. What's that? Look, I've worked on contracts for the commission for 10 years now. Yes, I have complete confidence in my information. You can record that. All right. I'll call you back immediately. Goodbye.
Hank? Hank!
He's agreed to cancel. The ray bomb won't go off.
Thank God.
All right, Steve. You can come down out of the ship.
There he comes. He's opening up.
All right, Steve. Come on down out of the ship.
Sure, Hank.
Hank, I was scared. I was plain scared.
All right, easy now. It's all over. Bomb won't go off.
Thank God. Hey, look. I want to see Mary and the baby. Can you get me transportation now?
Hey, wait a minute. It's almost 12. They won't let you in the hospital now.
I want to see the baby.
For sure you do, but you've been under strain. I've got a shot here for you, Steve. Give you a good night's sleep. All right. Roll up your sleeve.
Sure, sure.
Now, that'll make you sleep. Sergeant will find you a bed.
Come on, Mr. Weston.
Well, good night, Hank. I am kind of beat. It's been a tough night.
Sure has. Thought for a minute he was going to blast those rockets and send us all to King and come.
Yeah.
Quite a stunt getting the ray bomb test called off.
It isn't called off.
But the call.
Ames couldn't get the chief. I was talking to a blank screen. Bomb goes off in a couple of minutes.
Oh. Poor Steve. He's one of the best.
He was the best. 1 in 10 million.
Some story of his, poor guy. For a while, he almost had me believing that quarantine. That's a very common delusion. The end of the world.
Last night. Never saw the stars so bright.
Better be getting in. That wind is cold.
Bomb goes off in 30 seconds. Poor Steve.
You know, Hanson, there's just one thing.
Yeah?
It's outside my field, but I'm curious. How did he keep that ship in the air for 10 hours with only 10 minutes fuel?
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Outer Limit by Graham Doerr, as adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Joseph Julian, Wendell Holmes, Joe DeSantis, Bob Hastings, James Dukas, and Freddie Chandler. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
You don't have to stop whatever you're doing to listen to your radio. Though you may have a lot to do, do whatever you've got to do. NBC will still get through with music and drama, a live panorama. NBC's always got something brewing. Listen and you'll agree that there's always a smile from a twist of the dial to radio. NBC.
Either you've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry, no job, no money. The one you loved and deserted you, that makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue, right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, www.citr.ca. Code Blue.
Here's how he feels about it. Blues ain't nothing but a man. Good man feeling bad, no how. That's all that is.
And you are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Brian McDonald, and that's all the time we have for Skull Tall. You were listening to the Outer Limits episode of X-1. Or was it the X-1 episode of The Outer Limit? Really doesn't matter. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Canada Post Rock with John. So from all of us here in beautiful Vancouver, please have a safe and happy weekend.